You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to the Earth Station MCU podcast, your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, The Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, and so much more. Visit us at our Facebook group, Earth Station MCU, at earthstationmcu.wordpress.com, or email us at earthstationmcu@gmail.com. Hello, Marvel Universe! My name is Jennifer Hartshorn, and welcome back! This is our 24th episode, and tonight we are going to be talking about the news as always. Of course, we've got some casting news, some directorial rumors, all sorts of things going on, and then I'm very excited we're going to be talking about Marvel cosplay. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And in addition to my co-host, John Rabin, I would like to introduce Katie D.
Hi, guys.
Hey!
So
tell us how you got involved with Marvel and cosplay and everything.
I got involved in cosplay the first year that I went to San Diego Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I did the first Avengers movie style Maria Hill that I really started to get into MCU cosplay.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. You going to be at Dragon Con this year?
I should be, yes. Without any hitches from work, I'll be there.
Fantastic.
You know, I was actually going to do that question as part of our second segment.
Go. Oh, well, I was just asking. So
okay,
grumble.
Okay, this is John's first time at the helm for section two. So we'll forgive him.
Mean I'm in charge?
Yeah, I told you you're in charge.
All right, we're going to level 10 the heck out of this.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so we've got a bunch of rumors, one of which is possibly Emily Blunt as Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of that?
That's actually a fairly it's a fairly old rumor that seems to have mm-hmm. new life in it lately. So it's questionable whether that means that it is more likely that Emily Blunt is going to end up being Carol Danvers or mm-hmm. if somebody just decided to start things up again.
Yeah, I agree. It's come around a bunch of times before. I think that at this point, there are enough places reporting it that it probably, you know, it's. I'm going to say more likely than not.
Yeah.
Let me take a look and see.
Because it was originally rumored that she was in talks with Marvel, and she kind of hemmed and hawed and didn't really confirm or deny.
Right.
And also, apparently, this as the story goes, she was originally up for Black Widow in Iron mm-hmm. Man 2.
Yep.
And she turned it down. And so she's kind of like seeing how everything has taken off now, kind of wanting to get back into the mix.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, I've been a big supporter of Katie Sackhoff for that. I think she would be awesome. But, the thing is, with a lot of these casting rumors and whatnot, you know, we're told, oh, this person is in talks, and then they're not. But mm-hmm. it's sort of like not MCU, but the whole Channing Tatum thing was it Gambit that's been going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
Ah, it was a Gambit. Ha ha.
Indeed, indeed. But yeah, they said, oh, he's in talks. It's looking like a sure thing. And then they're like, oh no, it turned out it was just a rumor and it's not true. And now he's back in.
Yep.
So
just trying to give comic book fans in general a little heart attack every week.
Yeah, and also, you know, to keep the names in the news.
Fox is doing a good job of that, and you know, the latest story that I saw today is that even the Fantastic Four cast has not seen the movie yet.
That is what I have heard as well. And they got some kind of awkward questions, I guess, mm-hmm. about, you know, how they're related and all that, but
what happened to the things junk? I mean, he's clearly not wearing pants.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, if that's an issue that people want to talk about.
Well, you know, I'm Brody Bruce or whoever Jason Lee's character was from Mallrats.
Oh, gotcha, right, okay. That's cool. Well, we've got other news in terms of casting. Constance Zimmer has been announced for that she's going to be on S.H.I.E.L.D. for next year, and it sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like maybe another Gonzalez type of role or something.
Could be. We don't exactly know what her real status is yet. All we know is that she is going to be, she's part of a government agency that kind of studies and tracks the Inhumans.
Mm-hmm, right. And it'll be very interesting to see if that ends up crossing over with Civil War. I would love that. But we'll see. So she's definitely going to be coming on as at least a recurring mm-hmm. person. There was another person, Andrew Howard, that has also been announced as being in next season. Let me see.
Yeah, what was his name? His character's name was Brandt or something?
Banks.
Who started with a B?
Yeah, it says, yep. At MCU Exchange, they said it had just been announced that he has joined the third season as Banks, an authoritative and intimidating agent, which will be a major recurring role mm-hmm. on the show. Mm-hmm. So that's all we got for now, but we're going to have a pretty yeah. crowded bus or whatever they end up having for transfer.
We have one more rumor in the Black Panther directing department.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It seems that the new favorite amongst the betting types, nobody from Marvel has mm-hmm. said anything. It could be F. Gary Gray. And mm-hmm. F. Gary Gray, like his recent movie that's going to come out is Straight Outta Compton. It's a biopic based on the NWA.
NWA.
And I'm actually, yep. I'm interested in seeing it because, you know, the NWA is a huge part of rap history, a huge part of the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the number of guys out of that group who are still famous today. I mean, in fact,
yeah,
Dr. Dre is about to release another album after 16-year hiatus.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, yeah, I think he definitely, you know, is a name that's in the news right now, and he seems to have some pretty good cred. So yeah, I mean, like I said, Marvel, I've got a lot of faith in them when it comes to directors and actors in terms
and
of
And, you know,
casting,
apparently he was in the running for Captain America Winter Soldier. Yeah, he dropped out so he could make Straight Outta Compton.
Uh-huh. Very cool. There's a few rumors circulating about Jessica Jones. There's a new logo released, which not terribly exciting, but we've got one now. And they're now saying that it is going to be more quote unquote, and I'm actually making air quotes. You can't see it, but I'm making air quotes that she's going to be more damaged than she is in the comics. And boy howdy, I'll be honest, I haven't read those comics, but it sounds like it's pretty dark already.
Not enough about the Alias comics as I do. I mean, how do you get darker than that? I'm almost afraid to know.
Yeah, I mean, certainly with Daredevil, we explored, you know, the mm-hmm. limit of how dark can we go in terms of violence. But, you know, the Jessica Jones stuff is, you know, I mean, I think it's going to have the violence there as well, but there's also the potential with Purple
yeah.
Man... Some very mind-screwing, you know, sexual abuse kind
there
of thing.
There are going to be some Tenet fans out there that might be shit.
That are going to lose
their
shit.
They're going to lose it. They might, like, you know, they might become the new, like, you know, 50 Shades of Grey type fans, you know, like...
Oh, God, no!
Like,
no,
it's okay,
no.
You can do that to me.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
no, maybe Loki fangirls. Maybe we'll make that a more acceptable.
I apologize to all the Tenet fangirls already for even saying that.
That's right. You should be sorry.
I didn't follow. Sorry, sticking my tongue out.
Okay.
Oh, you know, if you've seen Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yes, of course, I know. Yes, David Tennant is scenery-chewing evil in that.
Lovely.
We had a picture released of Jeremy Renner within the last week or so, and it's interesting because I have been told by a couple of people that they have wrapped filming on Civil War in Atlanta, at least. I'm sure they're still going to be doing pickups and all kinds of stuff, but supposedly they've wrapped up. The last date that they had a call for extras was the 27th, and that was for people to be in Washington, D.C. in some kind of like a park scene or something like that. They wanted people with bicycles and stuff. But it sounds like they've wrapped up. But Jeremy Renner was apparently sighted wearing a Team Captain America hat.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So what do you think? Where do you think he's gonna? Do you think he's gonna end up being on Cap's side? Or
I think it's entirely possible, and it would be in line with his character in the comics. Of course, you know, Renner's been out promoting Mission Impossible: Rogue Nation, which was really good. I loved it. So, you know, naturally, he probably just grabbed whatever from Atlanta and is wearing it, might not even be thinking about it, and of course, somebody snaps a shot.
Yeah, of course,
and now the internet, of course, is wild with rumors that he's definitely Team Cap, which, like I said, wouldn't make sense for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, he's no great fan of Tony's, and I just see him more likely going for Cap, but... I mean, putting aside what's in the comics, who do you think is going to side with Tony?
I think what you get with Tony, obviously you're going to get War Machine, because they're good buds.
Right.
Wanda's been sided with Cap, so she might be on his team. We haven't really seen pictures of, other than like the one picture with him getting food truck food. We haven't really seen a lot of leaked stuff about Robert Downey Jr., so we don't know who exactly might be on his side. Vision could be on his side, maybe not. There's still the rumors that that Mark Ruffalo is going to be in this.
Yeah, at this point that hasn't been substantiated by anything that I've really seen. So
yeah, other than RDJ just telling him, you're in the movie.
Right.
So I don't know. We could see new people come up. Obviously, we know also that
Ant-Man's going to be in it. But it sounds like, you know, looking at the post-credit scene from Ant-Man, it sounds like he's going to be
outside. Which was actually the dailies from Civil War. So that's what we saw is a scene in that movie.
Right. So obviously Falcon's going to be with Cap. I assume Black Widow's going to be with Cap because they're pretty tight. Ant-Man. They're saying that Spider-Man might actually have more than just a little cameo.
Right.
I was not super impressed with the sourcing for that particular article. I don't know that they actually know what they're talking
maybe,
about.
Maybe
but,
not.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that he was in Atlanta for long enough to do that much. On the other hand, you can have Spidey in a scene, and you don't actually need the actor for that. So
that's also true, but, you know, we know Tom Holland's been hitting the gym and trying to bulk up and gain himself some muscles for Spidey, so...
Sure, although he's... I mean, it's only been, what, like 6 weeks since he was cast?
True.
So... There's a finite amount you can do.
Yeah, we just don't know yet. I mean, we know we got the reference to him in Ant-Man as well.
Yep. Definitely. And there's been some additional rumors about season 2 of Daredevil. They've got some pictures that have come out with Punisher and about that? You remember George Marston, our who joined us on a lot of our earlier episodes. This is actually an article by him from Newsarama. Yes,
I haven't checked the website today. We've actually been a little busy at work.
I understand. Well, it says Daredevil Seasons 2 Punisher to be, quote, most Marvel, unquote, version of
okay,
the character.
Okay, I did read that, but, you know, I thought they did pretty good with Ray Stevenson, but that's me. I mean, the movie was a little camp, but Ray was probably the closest anybody's been to the Punisher so far. No offense to Thomas Jane or Thomas Jane's fans out there.
Indeed. But, yeah, so, I mean, again, they're talking about it being super dark. I mean, from the comics, what should we expect from Punisher?
We're going to expect the streets of Hell's Kitchen to be awash with the blood of gangsters.
Indeed. So which brings up a good point. It seems like he and Daredevil would be more likely to be on the same side, right? Because they're both fighting against the gangs.
Yeah, but at the same time, Daredevil is kind of one of those no-kill villains, or no-kill heroes.
Yeah, true.
You know, he believes in letting the justice system work itself out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, exactly. Because he's a lawyer.
So he wants to see these guys punished. He wants to see them put away. Frank Castle mm-hmm. wants to see them punished. He wants to see them put in the grave.
Gotcha. So that'll probably be where they differ.
Right, that's usually where Frank Castle is typically differed with just about everybody else in the MCU.
Gotcha. Makes sense. And then we've got, we've had one more entry into the Dub Smash Wars.
Oh, yes, just when you thought it was over, it's back on.
Indeed. So you want to tell us a little bit
about
that?
Yeah, it seemed to be a response to Haley's last video using Chris Evans.
Right.
You know, once again, we see Clark in the in the Agent Carter outfit with smeared mascara as if he'd been crying, singing it like it was supposed to be me or something.
Uh-huh. That's awesome. And I know that there was a talk of them getting charity involved
for
that.
Coy pounced in at the last minute with the sign saying, okay, it's on now, this is for charity. And we haven't heard anything back from Haley and James yet, but we'll see.
Well, you know, they might actually have lives and not be in the same place, so, you know, they may need to have some time to get them together.
What? Come on! Actors don't have lives.
I know. They probably
All the people at your show are probably sleeping at the theater right now, like hanging upside down like bats from the lighting.
That's right. That's all actors do is just they never leave. Sometimes it seems like that, definitely.
Yes, especially when you're like, I want to go home.
Sorry, that's me.
So another thing that came up was rebranding the Infinity Stones.
Yes.
Which, I don't know, I didn't really see why we would need to rebrand the Infinity Stones, but they're now calling them the Infinite Six.
You know, whatever. They're the Infinity Stones. I thought it was more like a reference to this one is being that one is that. And it just seems like, okay, we kind of knew that already. I don't know why this is a big deal.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, the article said, you know, Marvel is officially rebranding the Infinity Stones, and I thought, okay, why do we need to rebrand them? I mean, that's kind of what they are. And I don't really see any point in doing that. It's not like, you know, there's any kind of copyright reason behind it or anything. And, I mean, the Infinity Stones or the Infinity Six, the only difference is that or the Infinite Six, the only real difference is that it's saying how many
there
are.
Yeah, it's just like, I figured like there was definitely more like, okay, yes, we are officially calling them the Infinity Stones, not the Infinity Gems.
Right. Which is what they were in the comic, right?
And my whole attitude to that is just, you know, whatever, call them what you like. You know, guss it up however you like, Trebek.
Indeed. Let's see. We had some very cool artwork up around London. Well, they're calling it installations,
yes,
which I guess is the correct word for it. But little tiny itty bitty Ant-Man.
Yes.
The
first one I saw before this before it really got big was the one of that parking post just pushed to the side. They obviously had been hit by a car or something. But you know, this installation artist put Ant-Man and Yellowjacket fighting on a damaged corner of it as if they'd caused it.
Right.
Which, you know, we saw from Ant-Man, just because they're small doesn't mean they can't have an impact on the larger world.
Exactly.
And that's going on in London, and I kind of wish I was there to see it for myself.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. On the other hand, you know, I can't really talk because I got to see, you know, Civil War being filmed right next to where I work, so, you know.
Yes.
I can't complain too much. All right, anything else you can think of for stuff in the news
Not
right
really.
Now?
I think that's the majority of it right now.
Alrighty, cool. Well, then we are going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will be joined by Katie and Alyssa to talk more about cosplay.
Hi, this is Siri. I would never, never ever listen to the Earth Station 1 podcast. Who the heck says howdy anyway? Why don't you listen to Chris Hardwick instead? I can get you his information. The Nerdist is everywhere anyway, haha. That was a joke. The Earth Station 1 podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstation1.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
Welcome back, everybody, and now we're going to be talking about cosplay. This is something that has been getting bigger and bigger in recent years, and I have just been thrilled at how many people have been jumping on doing stuff related to Marvel. And, of course, my co-host John has been doing cosplay for quite some time, mostly on the Marvel side. Mostly it's been Coulson, but we've been hearing a little bit about his Vision cosplay that's coming up. Katie, what characters do you usually do?
Mostly so far I've just done variations of Maria Hill's various costumes and Peggy Carter's.
Okay, cool. And we are also joined by Alyssa Jackson, who was on our very first episode. So we're happy to welcome you back. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved with cosplay stuff.
Yeah, I actually got started because I started going to Dragon Con. And when you go and you don't wear a costume, you're the weird one out. So very quickly decided to start cosplaying. And it started out very simple with a Gryffindor tie and a, you know, gray skirt. So I had like a Gryffindor uniform, and devolved very quickly into some pretty hardcore costuming. So at this point, kind of my main characters, I prefer doing interpretations of costumes, typically vintage dress styles. So I have like a 1940s version of Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers. I've done Inara from Firefly. I've done Bobaton's Harry Potter. Working on a Peggy Carter, as everyone is for Dragon Con this year.
Indeed, we just need to fill the Marriott with red hats and blue dress.
It's gonna be pretty epic.
You're gonna do something. You're not gonna do the red hat outfit?
I am. That's my current plan. I'm literally ordering fabric as we speak.
I have to wonder if the company that makes that particular shade of lipstick just one morning woke up and they had 1,000 orders and wondered what the heck happened.
not only
that company, Stetson makes the official version of the hat. And I can imagine they have probably been absolutely...
It was sold out. I had to get on the waiting list for it, and I luckily got it basically as soon as it came back in stock.
I feel kind of bad because the first time it came out, I did not get on the waiting list. I got it the first time around.
Oh,
it's probably because I had to order an extra large, because like the group, the Agent Carter cosplay group that I was a part of, was talking about, oh my gosh, you know, small, medium, and large are all sold out. And I was like, well, I only need an extra large. I guess I lucked out there.
Yeah, I needed a small, so I have a tiny head, apparently.
I have a ginormous one, so, you know.
Maria Hill with a ginormous head. I wonder what how that happened.
Keep poking the bear, buddy. Keep poking the bear.
All right. Yeah, it's kind of like for us Doctor Who fans, as soon as Matt Smith came on the scene and the whole bow ties are cool thing, bow tie sales increased like 300%.
So true.
It's not terribly surprising. And, you know, I've gotten on the Agent Carter bandwagon as well. Not even with the Dub Smash stuff, which I've been told at some point I'm going to have to borrow somebody's Agent Carter outfit.
Right.
But I've prepped a Edwin Jarvis. And I got really lucky. The cosplay gods were with me one day, and I was searching around on eBay for a gray three-piece herringbone suit like he wears. Lo and behold, one in my exact size for $50.
Wow, that's
like,
awesome.
Yes, have it now.
That is awesome.
And the thing was, you know, like the first con I wore to was SC Comic Con in Greenville, South Carolina, put on by Rob Young in Borderlands. And I was kind of walking behind an Agent Carter who had, her husband was Dugan. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Miss Kata! Miss Kata! Like, no response at all.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I actually, I had my kind of half-assed Peggy Carter. I didn't have the right hat. I had, like, more like a fedora. But I had the blue and white outfit for the most part, and down to the seam stockings and everything. And I had a couple people want pictures with me at MomoCon this year. So that was
kind of awesome.
Cool.
So going back a little bit into time, not even your first MCU cosplay. Melissa, you mentioned yours, but Katie, what was your first cosplay ever? I mean, not counting like children's Halloween costumes.
Am I going to get thrown off the podcast if it's a non-Marvel one and if I say it's a DC one? Okay.
No,
I mean,
of course
not. I'd like to work within the rules. So it was actually my first Dragon Con. At the very last minute, I decided to go. And at the very last minute, I decided to throw together a Renee Montoya-style question costume, which
nice.
Is basically just
oh, cool.
a gray suit and a gray fedora. Uh-huh. And then the only thing I had to figure out how to make was that faceless mask. And literally what I did was I took a bunch of pairs of pantyhose and stretched it over like a face mask. Because I wanted
awesome.
To be able to see, you know.
Hey, if it
right,
works,
right.
it works.
And
absolutely.
I was pleased that, like, a handful of people recognized me. Like, everyone who didn't was like, oh, Lady Clayface. And I was like, you know what? I'll take it.
You know, I find that that happens. You always get that one person or, you know, a few people who think you're something else than you are. The biggest.
And when you're doing yeah. something like Jarvis, I can imagine you're probably going to get mistaken for Alfred and every other character that wears a three-piece.
I don't know. I thought about, like, I was musing the other day, grabbing my friend Matt Black, and, you know, he did Alfred, I think, last year or 2 years ago. It's just like, hey, man, we need to get together, you and me, at least, even if it's just you and me, or maybe grab Howard, grab Bruce, do
yeah.
some kind of funny picture.
Okay. I keep getting mistaken every time a lot of times when I'm wearing my Captain Marvel dress,
yeah.
I get lots of Wonder Woman.
Well, because it's got like the angular red.
It does.
On
it
right?
does. Yeah. It's yeah. I can definitely see how the mistake can be made.
The worst.
Ahead.
Oh, sorry. The worst mistake for me usually, it happens as Coulson. And, if I've got, say, a prop like the Destroyer with me, I get confused for Men in Black.
Right.
And if
right.
I don't have it with me and I have other stuff, I will be confused for con or hotel staff because I'm dressed up.
In yeah. a suit, right.
So, you know, it's the downside of the suit. You know, the only other downside being you get haters going, that's not a costume, man.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a comfy costume.
I was
gonna say, yeah. Speaking of comfy, that's the one thing that when I'm thinking about, you know, all the conventions that I go to, in terms of, you know, TimeGate and MomoCon and DragonCon are all in Atlanta during like
yes.
the hottest part
yes.
of the year. And man, anybody who wears one of these incredibly hot costumes has all of my sympathy because oh my.
Let me tell you about my costume. One of my costumes 2 years ago, I did a Victorian lady version of the 11th Doctor, which involved a long sleeve button up shirt, an adapted tweed jacket that I'd made into like a Victorian shape, split pants or split skirt. So it was full length skirt, and I wore, you know, socks and ankle boots. And I wore
right.
that. I marched in the parade.
Oh, I was going to ask if you did the parade in
mistake
that.
Number one.
yes.
Which even at 10 o'clock in the morning, it's at least 80 degrees, if not hotter.
Oh, yeah.
And then
yeah.
I did not have a hotel room that year. It was a terrible failed experiment.
So you didn't get to shower.
Yeah, I was in that until I think 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was a disgusting, disgusting mess by the end of that day.
Yeah, there's no such thing as comfort at Dragon Con. I mean, even just a suit for Coulson, I'll be sweating buckets by midday if I'm outside too long.
Yeah. With my Peggy Carter outfit, I admit, you know, I was looking for something that had the right collar, you know, because she has kind of like a broad white collar, right, with the blue suit outfit. And I found a sleeveless blouse that had the right kind of a collar, and I'm like, heck, if I'm going to have a blue jacket on over it, I'm not going for long sleeves. Why would I even do that?
Yeah.
All right, so we talk about first cosplay. How about first MCU cosplay?
I don't think any of my characters count as MCU. Captain Marvel will be in the MCU.
Yes.
Right. But was not at the
time. And Peggy Carter,
but I haven't, right? I haven't actually done it yet.
Well, that can count. Oh, okay. I mean, that's your first.
Yeah.
But it's in progress.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And Katie, you mentioned a little bit about this earlier. What made you choose Maria Hill?
It's funny because before the Avengers movie came out, I knew nothing about Maria Hill, and actually at the time that the Phase 1 was ramping up towards the Avengers, I was very much a DC Comics reader. And then I had a very kind friend named Allison who kind of was like, oh, you should check these out. And so I started reading, and I really liked this recurring character, Maria Hill, because I thought she was funny and tough. And then Allison tells me, she's like, oh yeah, she's going to be in the Avengers movie, played by this actress who, up until this point, I had not heard of because I don't watch How I Met Your Mother. And I went into it like, okay, so she's going to be kind of this tough badass, you know, and she's awesome. And I loved her costume. It was so sleek. It was so nice. I mean, I love the way the classic S.H.I.E.L.D. costume looks, the blue and white, but I also loved their interpretation of it, because it looked very similar, because like with the same lines and straps and stuff, but it was just sleeker, it was more realistic looking, and I just really fell in love, like, right then, like, wow, she's got a great uniform, it's going to be hell to put together and try to figure out, but it's great.
Yeah, for me, it was 2011, and I really wanted to be part of Superhero Costuming Forum's Marvel shoot, but I had no money and no time to be able to put together something like really from the comics. But Thor had come out. And I was, you know, usually sometimes I base my ideas for what I'm going to do on my physical appearance and more specifically the shortness of my hair. So I kind of took one look at Coulson from Thor, and I was like, I've got a tie like he wears. I need to get aviators. I buy myself a badge, and boom, you know, it's Coulson from Thor. And
and it's funny because I wouldn't even have thought of Coulson as being from Thor, but yeah, that works.
Yeah, it had honestly never occurred to me before, not in his appearances in Iron Man and Iron Man 2, but just suddenly this is something I could do. And I don't know, there might have been people doing it before him, but I just don't know if anybody was actually doing it before Avengers came out the next year. It was kind of one of those things where I showed up and I was afraid at first, nobody's going to recognize this. I'm just going to be this guy in a suit and a pair of aviators. And then my friend Talia, and I didn't know her yet at that point. But, you know, the first thing is, like, from out of earshot, I hear, Coulson! And just Tally just running up to me to give me this bear hug.
Awesome.
So that's how we made friends. And now she's the Black Widow for our Avengers group. And we're all very tight, close-knit friends, and we go to each other's stuff now.
Very cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So where do you guys, you know, John's mentioned sort of you know, going for characters that have the same hairstyle as you or something like that. Where do you guys go for inspiration? Is it, you know, do you go out and look at, you know, just do like image searches, or is it seeing somebody else's costume, or what gets you interested in doing a certain look?
Well, I did one of my favorite cosplays that I ever did was a couple of years ago. There was a post that was going around Tumblr pretty heavily, and it was the Avengers as evening gowns. And They were all amazing, but my very favorite one was the Captain America, which was like a little off-the-shoulder sleeve. It was a cocktail-length dress, like with a big full skirt and the striped bodice. And I was like, that is incredibly cute. That is so much fun. I'm going to do it. And there were a few of them. Actually, the year that I made it, I think I saw like three other people in that outfit. But the cool thing was, because it was an illustration, all of us interpreted it a little differently. So, you know, all of us kind of had our own idea of how it should be constructed and how to do everything. So that was really inspiring for me. And it gave me the first idea of doing an interpretation of an outfit. For years, and I wonder if you guys have had this trouble, I had been trying to do screen perfect interpretations. And the problem with that is, the thing that really frustrated me was, I'm a seamstress. Like, I do costume design semi-professionally. So, like, I can sew, I can build myself this stuff. But for so many of these costumes, you know, the fabric was sourced in a very specific way. You literally can't get it. So I would come as close as I could, and then I would always be disappointed when there was somebody else who was wearing the same thing at con, and they'd been managed to get a better fabric, or they'd be able to source something that was closer, and it would get me really frustrated and really disappointed when I couldn't get it exactly right. So I have found way more satisfaction in doing an interpretation of a costume, and it satisfies me a little bit more creatively. Now, that being said, I am going to do Peggy Carter, and I'm going to get as close as possible. And I'm actually really excited about that. And it's the first time I've been excited about doing a picture perfect cosplay in a long time. And I think it's partly that Peggy satisfies the things about cosplay that I really love, which, like, I love vintage. That's kind of my area of expertise. So she is of my favorite era. She's just my favorite character. She's so inspiring, and I love her so much. So I'm super excited to be doing this one.
And that's certainly one of the things that can be kind of frustrating is with screen accuracy, especially as somebody who maybe has a bit more technical skill or is able to get a hold of the thing that looks closer. But at the same time, you know, even as much as that can be kind of disappointing for us when we see somebody who's done it better, usually in the cosplay community, we can go up to them and be, hey, where'd you find this? How'd you do that? And you know, if they're a nice person, generally they'll tell you.
Oh, absolutely.
And they'll give you help and assistance, which is, you know, one of the great things about the community.
I totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing that can be difficult about screen accuracy is cost.
Yes.
That's usually the sticking point for me, because I support myself and I have a finite amount of income. And there have been times, I mean, I've had friends who have talked about, oh yeah, I found this fabric and it's such and such money. And you know, I mean, like, wow, I'm glad you can be able to do this as well as you can with, that's great that you got this super screen accurate stuff, and but I can't, like, when I go,
how do you afford this?
Yeah,
I try not to make judgments about other people's spending, because, like, there's times where I'm sure they'd give me some side eye for what I spend my money on. But I mean, when I go to the fabric store, a lot of the times is close enough is good enough. Like, and also it comes down to, there's also another factor that I'll talk about in a sec, but I mean, like, with my Peggy blue suit, I found some stuff at one fabric store that I thought was going to work, and then it turned out the material was just too stiff, and if it got a wrinkle in it, it was there permanently, and I was desperate to try and find something else. And then literally on a whim, again, when I was visiting my parents, I walked into another fabric store, and, like, literally in the front row, you know, I could even hear, like, the, you know, choir music, and I had, like, beams down on this bulk of beautiful blue suiting material that flows nicely, and I'm like, well, I guess that's a sign.
That's awesome.
But the other thing that kind of is a sticking point for me is my comfort level. You guys were talking about that before. And one example is, even if the character wears heels, I can't, because I won't be able to walk the next day. So Peggy has a beautiful pair of shoes that are made by Bait Footwear, I believe.
Yep.
And I've had a lot of friends talk about, you know, how comfy they are and how wonderful they are. They're a little expensive, but I was like, nah, I gotta do it with flats. And then the other example I can think of is I made earlier this year, Peggy's SSR World War II uniform. And
nice.
If you know anything about reenacting uniforms, those were made out of wool.
Yep.
Like the legit thing. And so I could have gotten some wool fabric, but then in the back of my mind, it's like, you know, dummy, you're going to be in Atlanta when you're wearing this.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, even when you're in air-conditioned hotels, it's so crowded, and there's just so many people that it ends up being really hot.
I mean, I know Civil War reenactors who have passed out in their woolen, you know, whatever. And I was just like, you know what? Close enough is good enough. Like, that's my point. But, I sympathize with you, Alyssa, because I, too, have that frustration of, like, but I want it to look just like it. And then you have to be like, all right, slow your roll. You're not the person who made this costume. You don't have their budget. You don't have their skills. Like, even if you're as good as you think you're as good as they are, you still have to be like, okay, give yourself something realistic here.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And luckily, because I am a costumer and I do vintage era shows are kind of my specialty of what I've worked on. I've found some handy shortcuts. Like, I found there's a website called, I might not be able to remember the name. I think it's called Amerimark, something like that. It's a catalog and its core audience is old ladies.
Awesome.
Because 2 years ago, I literally permanently damaged my feet by wearing a pair of heels to Heroes Con, and I wore them the whole day and, like, permanently injured my toe from wearing them, which I was like, I can't ever do that again. That was awful. So I found this site that they sell these shoes for old ladies, and because they're for old ladies, the styles are actually pretty accurate to vintage, and vintage shoes most of the time, especially in the 30s and 40s, had a lower heel.
Mm-hmm.
So I found a whole bunch of pairs of heels that were only like 1 inch to 2 inches tall that were designed for comfort. So it was an awesome, it was actually like super convenient that I had that trick up my sleeve that I was like, old lady shoes, they will save my bacon.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all.
And they looked really cute, so it was the perfect alternative. Yeah. So I'm definitely with you on comfort being a major factor.
And screen accuracy has really drained my wallet. Sometimes we talk about the expensiveness of things. I was fortunate to make contact with Ann Foley, who was the costume designer on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing anybody wears in that cast is cheap.
Right.
I can't even imagine what that's like for her, because so many of her characters that she costumes for get beat up. So I can't even imagine what it's like to watch that super expensive stuff get trashed every week.
And you've got to buy two or three of them.
Yeah. If you make like that custom, she was talking about it at a convention, that silver dress that May wears during that dance scene with Coulson. Like, she told the people at the panel, you know, I have professional seamstresses where I will design something, and they just basically sew all my stuff. And she's like, they never wanted to see another silver sequin again, because they had to sew five of them.
Yeah. This is one reason because Atlanta has become kind of a major filming location, I've looked into joining a costuming crew. Another friend of mine who's also a costumer has been doing that, has been working on being a seamstress at some shows. And good Lord, I mean, it is a ton of work. And you're absolutely right, because you are making two and three and four and five of outfits to satisfy those needs, which is, it's too much.
I really feel bad, because then I think about myself complaining. I only have to sew for myself. I don't have to sew for a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't sew. I pay other people to sew for me, and they're nice like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it is, I totally know what you mean about the cost and how much you're willing to spend on things, because my boyfriend is super fan Star Wars and Star Trek. And he specifically just recently had an incident where he had ordered, there's a well-known company apparently that does.
Yeah, Nova.
They specialize in Star Trek outfits.
Yep.
And he ordered a year ago a replica outfit from the first Star Trek movie.
Oh.
It came in a year later.
Wait, are we talking about like wow. Star Trek the motion picture?
Yes, Star Trek the motion
Those
picture.
Those awful late 1970s.
Yep.
Blob and grayish blue horrible things.
The one that he ordered is the maroon one with the little flap.
Yeah, the one that started off in Star Trek 2.
Yes, that's the one. And
that looks a lot better.
Yes, it's a great, it came in and it looked pretty good, but for the amount of money that he spent on it and then for it to come in that late and then it turned out that it didn't actually fit, they sent him the wrong size after all of that. So like, there are pitfalls in every, you know, corner of the cosplay world. And I do think that there are organizations that do take advantage of cosplayers because the amount of money that you can spend on these screen accurate replicas is mind boggling. Like I would never spend that much money.
Especially when you get into something like I know in Doctor Who costuming, it's a particularly big issue because if, you know, Amy or
Tenant's Code or something.
Yeah, or
like
if
that.
Amy or Clara got something from Forever 21, you know, and it's maybe the last of its kind, somebody goes out, buys them all, and like sells them on eBay for inflated prices.
Yeah, which really, really stinks for that. But you know what? It's unfortunately it's the culture we live in, and it does really suck that people will be jerk faces like that.
Yeah.
But I would love to get back to the question. I'd love to hear some more about what appeals to you, like what appeals to you as a cosplayer? Like, what are you drawn to as a character? Because I know for me, I don't particularly look like anybody. I don't. I don't have any character that I think I particularly resemble or look like. So that isn't really what attracts me to a character. So I would love to hear what attracts you guys to a character.
I mean, other than my physical appearance, the other thing that will do it for me is if I really love a certain character.
Mm-hmm.
And I reasonably think I can pull it off. And that's kind of how it happened with Vision, because you know he's been one of my favorite Avengers since high school, since the Kurt Busiek, George Perez run on the comic book. And I just, like, when I heard he was going to be in Age of Ultron, I just, like, I wanted to be him so badly. I was like, all my resources will be committed to this. You know, and I was fortunate enough to get a bonus at work that has pretty much helped pay for everything.
Nice.
And you're doing a combination of making some of it yourself and having somebody else help.
I am, right? Because, you know, it's one of those things where I could commission out everything, but I really want part of this to be me, and I want to make my own contribution to it.
Very cool.
So that's how I started working with Warbuff for the very first time to create armor. And so far it's going pretty well, I think. These gauntlets, I'm probably going to end up redoing it all next year, since it's, like I said, it's my first time dealing with this.
Well, and plus by next year we'll have had Civil War come out, and maybe he'll look completely.
God, I hope not. Spent too much money on this already for Marvel to change his look on me.
The perennial fear of the new character redesign.
You know, and it can be a problem, especially when you're dealing with a character like this. It's very hush hush and very under wraps. Trying to get any images it's like pulling teeth. And you know, you see the first kind of promos, and you see the first. The first toys and everything, but you can't guarantee that's going to be the final result. Because we've seen a couple different looks for Vision before the movie came out. And, you know, those details change over time. And I know another friend of mine, Robert Bland, who put together Vision already, and he put it based on the early artwork that was released. And it looks good. But it's just like now, you know, he's having to change things because they changed the ultimate look of the character.
Yeah, and if you're trying to go for screen accurate, yep. then then that can be frustrating. Yeah, I mean, I admit I have not done a whole lot of cosplay stuff, and I used to be a very good seamstress, but then I ended up doing live role-playing games in theater for a while and got so completely burned out that I never wanted to see a sewing machine ever again. I'm sure Alyssa can sympathize
yes.
with that. And so really pretty much everything that I've done has just been with found stuff, you know, like I'm in a store and I realize, oh my God, I could totally use that for this outfit. So I've done a few, Doctor Who type stuff. I've got my Lady Doctor version of the Third Doctor, where I was just going through my closet and I realized I had this red velvet vest that would just be perfect, and I realized, oh, if I can just get this and this and this, then I could make that an outfit. And even with the Peggy Carter thing, you know, I'm pretty broke at the moment, but I had a navy skirt and a navy jacket, and then it was just a matter of finding the right white blouse and mm-hmm. red hat to do that particular mm-hmm. outfit. But I try to go for things that I have, you know, at least somewhat of a resemblance
right.
to, because, right. you know, and that's another whole issue in cosplay is, you know, people who do or don't fit the body type of something. And, you know,
right.
I believe that everybody should feel free to cosplay whatever they want, but for me, I wouldn't feel right, you know, trying to play a character that was, you know, like...
Yeah.
16 or something.
And that I think brings up another interesting issue is, you know, what role do you feel physicality plays in this? I mean, do you feel inspired to, like, I'm gonna hit the gym, I'm gonna do it so I can do this character, or I'm gonna, you know, put some temporary dye or something in my hair so I can look like so and so, or use contacts or whatever you end up doing?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't feel particularly confident in my body. I definitely would not go for, like, there's a reason why I've never done a typical superhero costume. Like, I was probably never going to do the Captain Marvel Carol Danvers flight suit because I'm not comfortable mm-hmm. wearing spandex. That's just not me. But at the same time, it did help that, like, I had just dyed my hair blonde. So that was helpful, and I'm gonna be getting a friend of mine does wigs for a living, so she's helping me style a wig for Peggy Carter because I do want to have the dark hair, but you know, I've seen people do versions of the character where they don't necessarily look like that character, but their cosplay can be amazing, and
mm-hmm.
I'm definitely about. I think there's a whole lot of body shaming that goes on, and
right.
I feel very lucky that, and maybe I've heard other people have negative experiences at Dragon Con, but I've had the exact opposite. I almost inevitably, no matter what costume I'm wearing, have at least one person come up to me and tell me how much they like it and how they love that character. So that's really gratifying. I've had nothing but positive experiences with cosplay, and it really makes me upset when I hear that people have gotten shamed or had a negative experience, because
right.
it's just, that's not my experience of the community, and it makes me really sad when people decide to be a dill hole, because it's like, someone went to the time and effort to go to
right.
do this character and have the confidence to put that costume on, and that really should be a positive experience, so it makes me sad when that doesn't happen.
And half time your douchebags are going to be the people who can't do it themselves, but will be more than happy to hide behind a mask of internet anonymity and comment on how you did.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nobody got time for that nonsense.
Right. And I got to admit, you know, I've not always been particularly comfortable with my body either. And when I decided I was going to do Vision, I'm like, no, that's it. I'm going to hit the gym. I'm going to pick up a weight training regimen in addition to just running, so I can at least, you know, tone up a bit and look somewhat decent in spandex. And I think two or three weeks ago, I finally got in kind of the skin tight undershirt that I'm going to use. And I put that on and I was like, where'd all this come from? Didn't have that awesome. Before.
Well, good.
Well, like, what, it's like when Tobey Maguire woke up the next day after getting bit by the spider.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and if that's, you know, I know there is a big movement of, like, superhero training, like people who use superheroes as inspiration to be like their inspiration to keep them going. And so cosplay, I think, can kind of be a part of that of like, I'm going to get into shape because this is an awesome character and I want to be like that awesome character. So I see that as a positive.
It can be a great motivator. It certainly was for me. I was, I think at most when I started 186 and I was down to 170 this morning. That was the result of a weekend of binging. So I actually gained back a couple pounds I had lost a couple days before. But you know, it.
Yeah, personally, I you know, it's something that is similar in some respects to cosplay. I've been doing live role playing games for like 25 years now, and with that, it's a combination of wanting to look good in the outfit, and especially for those of us who are in the 40 plus range at this point, you know, if you're going to a LARP, you have to actually do the fighting and the running and things. Mm-hmm. And I know people who totally work out solely so that they can fight well in tents. So.
Yeah.
So it's sort of the same thing.
It's kind of bad when Elric, son of Ulrich, is wheezing and asking who's got a cigarette he can bum off of after the battle.
So Katie, so you're doing Maria Hill, but if you're doing like her shield type outfit, are you doing the sewing for that, or is that something where you're finding pieces that you can put together that work?
Generally, my process starts with me doing a whole bunch of screen capping of the movie, because even before I can go out and start sewing something, I have to have visual pictures in my head. Like, I can't just remember details. And what I'm really looking for is, like, where are the seam lines? You know, where is it loose? Where is it fitted? And then, generally, what I'll do is I'll just start hitting up websites like McCall, Simplicity, Butterick, Vogue even sometimes, even though I don't like to use Vogue patterns.
They're expensive. They're never on sale.
Sometimes they're on sale. You just have to look out for them.
Occasionally, yeah. But and then I'll try and find something. And this goes back to close enough is good enough. I know fully well that I will never find a Maria Hill pattern in any Butterick catalog or on the website. But what you do is you just say, okay, she's got pants, and the pants are well fitted. Let's find some well fitted pants, and then you get that basic pattern piece, and usually I'll cut it way too big first off, just because I want it, like, it needs to be taken in some places and not taken in other places, and I'll just start doing it that way, and then occasionally I'll sketch out where things are going to draw. I have a template for a female body form that I'll use sometimes, but most of the time it's just, like, going through patterns. Like, I've been known to just go into a Joann Fabrics and sit down for an hour and just look through pattern books and make notes. Like, oh, hey, this looks vaguely like this Peggy costume that I saw last night. And, you know, go from there. And the same thing happened with the Peggy Carter suit that I made. It was the exact same process.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what I do as well. I'm essentially building the pattern that I want out of existing patterns and making mm-hmm. alterations where necessary.
You really don't have a choice.
No, it's so true. And luckily, especially for Peggy, you know, Vogue and McCall's and Butterick, well, Vogue Simplicity and McCall's have done archive collections.
Yes,
They're bringing back their vintage patterns and rebuilding them for modern sizes, which is it's amazing.
Yeah.
I used a vintage Vogue pattern for my Captain America dress, and I'm using it again because I'm doing a pinup version of Belle from Beauty and the Beast.
Awesome.
Right?
So it has that off the shoulder look. I'm using the exact same pattern. And for my Peggy, McCall's has a 1930s suit that has the exact correct shape for Peggy's suit jacket. So I'm really excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
I did the same thing when I was looking for that kind of wide shirt that she had too. Mm-hmm. The exact same thing. Like, and yeah, it's just a lot of sitting down. It's a lot of, you know, patiently just kind of, will this work? Will this work? And sometimes, like, I usually buy patterns when they have those, like, buy five for $5, you know,
right.
And I'll get
totally.
A bunch that I might not use because they're super cheap. And I might, it's honestly nice to have options because there's nothing worse than getting home and be like, oh, this won't work.
Yeah.
Although I totally turned into that person back when I was doing a lot of costuming that had like an entire room that was nothing but patterns and pieces of fabric that I thought I would use at some point. And there was a point in my life where I was going to move and I had to just sort of accept, face the fact, I am not going to use 17 yards of panic velvet. I should probably let this go to someone
else. I personally
else.
Do a fabric purge every year. I think usually when spring break rolls around, I'm like, nope, too small, nope, never going to use it again, and then it all gets chucked out.
Yeah, anything less than a yard has to go in the garbage.
I don't do quilting, okay?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, it's nice, it's really nice, especially that you can basically just look for a shape that looks right, you know, and the nice thing is too, with the internet, I have found Pinterest to be a huge help when it comes to planning for costumes, because then I can pin like, here's five patterns that I think might work. And then I can look at them side by side and say, okay, this is the one that has the shape that I think is going to look the best.
There's an app out there that a lot of my friends have been using called Cost Planner, like cosplay, but Cost Planner.
Ooh,
and you can actually like have ongoing projects and it'll show like if you think it's 90% done, there's like a little progress bar that you can tick by and you can put down like, I think you can do like, you can calculate how much you spent on the costume so far, just like
that. Oh, so cool.
That would be
impressive. That's not really a question I need answered.
Yeah.
To quote Natasha.
There are downsides, but I mean, it's really cool to see that someone actually, and I hope it was a cosplayer who came up with this app and was like, hey, this is something that somebody out there could use. And I admit, I've used it a couple times, especially for patterns, because it's kind of hard to keep track sometimes of what you need. Like, I'm terrible at remembering. And then I could just open that and be like, all right, I needed these five. Okay.
It's a good way to stay organized, I think.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we're getting a little bit later into the evening. So we might want to start wrapping up. So I think I got one last question for everybody. And what is a future MCU costume that you want to do?
Ooh, good one.
Are we talking like if I had the money, time, and talent kind of thing?
Or,
Dream costume.
Objects.
Lady Sif. I like her. And honestly, I like both of her armors, so I can go either way. I think the second one looks probably a little bit nicer, I guess. I don't know. I like both of them, but I can sew decently well, but as far as like crafting armor, like what John's starting to get into right now with the Warbler and other people I've heard of use Syntra, I have no talent for that right now.
Yeah, me neither. I would love to learn though, like leather work and that kind of stuff is sort of the next area that I want to get into. Also millinery is a huge area of interest for me, so that's kind of the next thing I would love to be able to learn. Making hats. Oh yes, sorry. That's what millinery is. Making hats.
Yep.
Gosh, MCU. Well, I continue to do my Captain Marvels because, you know, she's coming and she's my favorite character hands down. I would love to do a Black Widow dress, like an interpretation of her outfit. That's definitely on my list.
Yeah, for me, this just came to mind because they just released an official picture of this today. Man, I would love to do the Wasp costume.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that would be super cool. But that would just, you know, you have something that is basically like armor, but then you've got to do the wings and you've got to make them, you know, look good and not look like fairy wings, and it would be very challenging.
I do love the classic wasp uniform from the comics, and that would be fun to do, but that's not technically MCU.
Fair enough. How about you, John?
Oh man, I can think of, you know, like a full-on Iron Man suit would be awesome.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? Oh, I saw at Anachrocon this year, I saw a steampunk Iron Man that was so cool.
Very cool.
Or, you know, there were, like, I've seen pictures online, somebody has done the Hulkbuster, and it's huge.
You would have to have built-in air conditioning.
You would have
for that,
to. or even, you know, I'll take even Daredevil would be nice.
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right, so let's just go around and And thank you all for joining us. If you want to give a plug for if you've got a cosplay page or a podcast that you'd like to promote, so go ahead and start us off, Alyssa.
Sure. I actually am a contributor to a website called Adventures in Poor Taste, which is, I know, it's the best name. It cracks me up every time. It's a pop culture website, and I specifically do comic book reviews for them.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, and Katie?
I'm not really on any podcasts. I believe this is my first one.
But do you have a cosplay page?
You can find me on Facebook, Katie D,
okay.
Spelled D-E-E. And then you can also find me okay. on Tumblr at Lanky Brunette Part Deux, D-E-U-X. And then
awesome,
one last place is Snarky Nerdette on, or sorry, the Snarky Nerdette, or A Snarky Nerdette. Wow, I really know my Twitter handle, really. A Snarky Nerdette on Twitter.
All right, and John, you want to remind us where your cosplay
page
is?
Yes, my cosplay page is Agent Doctor, and every time I say that, I notice at least a couple of new likes, so yay me. So by all means, come and check it out there. I'll try to post some more stuff about Vision once I have a little bit more to show. I've been just posting the progress pics to my personal page. I've been trying to wait until I have mm-hmm. something more significant to show off before I put it on my cosplay page.
All right, awesome. Well, thank you all very much. We really appreciate you coming by, and I definitely look forward to seeing what you folks do in the future. All right, so thank you all very much, and we will be taking some time off over the next month or so to get ready for Dragon Con. So we will see you in September for our next episode when we will tell you all about the fun of Dragon Con, and before you know it, S.H.I.E.L.D. will be back on! Hooray!
A little bird once said to me, you gotta live a little before you're happy. And if you take a lot, you'll be left with none. I had to learn a bit, live a bit, let it all sink in a bit.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.